I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's a football Friday, but when it's a football Friday in October now in Houston, it really is where football and baseball come together as one and share the spotlight. And the Astros up 3-1 on the Yankees, and really not just up 3-1 on the Yankees, but making all those horrible, horrible Yankee fans eat their words last night, drown in their tears, and really prepare for what is going to be, I think, more of a funeral death march today, tonight at 6:08 p.m. than an actual baseball game. For that, we thank the Houston Astros.
Some of the listeners are getting upset with us that we're being a little too casual about this game or just the series in general, that we're just assuming the victory, right? That we're going to jinx it somehow. I think we're putting qualifiers in front of it, right? We're saying, well, assuming that they take care of business tonight. I suppose there's always the chance. There's a less than 10% chance that the Astros don't win this series. But 1 in 10 is that should scare you. It would be an incredible disappointment, obviously, if they didn't somehow just clean up the floor with these clowns.
Okay, first of all, two things. One, only being cocky once you've beaten somebody is no fun.
That doesn't count. That's true.
At some point, you need to be cocky in the moment. You need to call your shot a little bit. Number two, if we're not going to do it when the Astros have, according to FanGraphs, a 92% chance of winning this series, and I would submit that it is even higher than that because of Verlander and Cole pitching in two of these games guaranteed, if there are even two. I think there's only going to be one game even left. But if we can't do it now, then when? Right? So
right, exactly.
Just stop being so nervous. If you if that's your deal, being nervous, then do your thing about being, but don't tell us how to be.
If what you're worried about, that's the thing. To be nervous right now, what you're doing is you're being nervous about a complete and total implosion. At which point, you as a fan you'll bear no responsibility
how'd you go through life?
There's no way. If the Astros were to somehow mess this up, it would have to be through an extreme set of circumstances and just non-performances. When everything we've seen shows the exact opposite, which is that the superior team is making adjustments throughout the course of a 7-game series, and that some adjustments there, it's just, this is what happens over 7 games. This is what would have happened with a 7-game series with the Rays. It's just that ultimately the better team makes more minor adjustments and they start to figure it out. And I thought right from the get-go last night, I felt pretty damn good about the lineup because everybody was making hard contact over those first 2 innings.
Yes.
It felt like, remember yesterday I tried to get kind of baseball nerdy and I used that term, regression to the mean, that I love so much.
I was really impressed.
Because it's never good enough to just say water finds this level or the pendulum swings. You got to make yourself sound fancy and say regression to the mean.
You totally sounded smart.
Well, there was a little bit of regression or ascension to the mean yesterday with the bats coming alive.
Sean,
look, you got to be on guard for this. This is what happens in baseball when the bats go cold.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, you know when you're sick and you can't ever remember a time when you weren't sick? You
yes.
start to get to a point where it feels like, well, this is what life is like, and this is how it always will be.
Yes!
That's exactly what it's like when the bats are cold. You can't even envision a time when all of a sudden the bats are going to come alive. And it happens fast. So you got to be on guard for that. You got to watch out for it and remember, oh, wait, yeah, Carlos Correa, as long as his back's not bothering him, is a damn MVP candidate. At some point, he's going to figure it out.
How big of a breakthrough did it feel like to see Yordan get a bloop single last night?
I know. Look at that. Look at Yordan.
Welcome to the party, Yordo.
Yeah. By the way, announcers, he's also 22 years old.
Yeah.
It'd be better if he was performing better. Then you could gush about how he's 22.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Have they been just talking about you and I think most people are way more tuned into the announcers than I am during
the
game.
You don't allow you're really screwing yourself out of some of the enjoying parts of sports is hating the announcers. I don't know. I feel like you're nervous because you're going to meet these guys someday and you don't want to.
It's not that at all. Yeah. If you go to my Twitter timeline, I'm critical of announcers on there. It's baseball.
Yeah.
It's the nature of the sport. Baseball, even when it involves my team, just the nature of the sport has me multitasking. It's why baseball is a live experience. Is going to the stadium, I think you see more casual sports fans going to baseball games One, there's more of them, obviously, but two, it is a sport that is more of a background sport where you can sit and you can drink a beer and you can socialize, as opposed to basketball and football. While football, there's a lot of downtime. Man, it is an intense situation where you're thinking about the next play. It's combat out there. Baseball is just
it's
sort of happening in the background.
I actually feel at a baseball game, maybe because of that, I feel like I get more absorbed in the game and I enjoy the flow of the game at the stadium, at the ballpark. Yeah. Whereas with football, all I can think the whole time is, my God, at home you never notice how many commercial breaks there are and how long they are, because you flip over to something, you go to red zone. Usually I go to red zone and then come back or whatever you do. At the baseball game, you know what I wish I would do? I got to start. I'd like to keep score. Yeah. I like to start keeping score at baseball games.
Okay.
Just actually like Barbara Bush out there with my actual
6'3", 6'4", 6'3".
Yeah.
DP.
Just to really kill, like the announcers do themselves.
Okay, well, to that point, this is what made me think about how the difference between how you and I absorb the announcers during these baseball games, you much more intently than I do. I saw something you had put in the rundown last night during the game, and as you were putting it in the run, because I had the rundown open, and you and I see each other typing in there sometimes. Oftentimes, I want to type in there, hey, mofo, how you doing? You know, like things like that. But we see each other working on the show in there. And I saw you put something about something Smoltz said about Altuve.
Right. Smoltz was actually
Smoltz
was giving Altuve a compliment, but the way he phrased it, it came off like a backhanded compliment, and I missed part of it. So I asked Twitter, what exactly was Smoltz saying about Altuve right there? And a couple people explained it to me, and it made sense. But I can't remember how he said it exactly. It was because he started it off by saying, you know, Altuve doesn't do many things right, but he's so good it doesn't matter. But what he was saying was that like he doesn't take pitches. He doesn't, like some of the things that stat heads are really going to love, he doesn't necessarily do it. He doesn't necessarily do the way you would want to, but because he's so good at everything else and, you know, he doesn't have to take a lot of walks to get a high on base percentage because he's so good. So that's what he was trying to say. But he presented it really weirdly.
Okay.
And so that annoyed me. But it wasn't – he was giving Altuve a genuine compliment. And so I'll
– But his execution of it bothered you.
Yeah, sometimes Smoltz does that a lot. I think sometimes he's trying too hard, and I can empathize with this. He's trying too hard to say something – and makes it sound more complex than it needs to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not criticizing overtly for that.
Do you?
I don't, and I will say with Smoltz, I see a lot of people on social media from both sides claiming that he loves the other team. I think Smoltz is pretty even-handed.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. I think he spreads the love around. I think he's critical in the appropriate moments. I don't have an issue with him at all.
I think he's great.
Yeah.
I think John Smoltz is awesome. I think he's really, really good. Do you like having... And we're talking about the announced team on the ALCS here on FS1. It wasn't Joe Buck last night. He was doing Thursday Night Football. Do you like having, or do you care, the previous series had catchers doing the color analysis. This one has a pitcher doing it. Do you notice a difference in it, or do you care? Or is it just the fact that maybe it was Girardi and Pazinski, you don't care about their position? You just didn't like those guys.
I like Smoltz. You know what, I like Smoltz just because I guess maybe I like hearing about the pitching more. And when you hear him talking about it, it's, you know, obviously it has that authenticity to it.
And I think, too, with this particular Astros team, Smoltz was an elite pitcher. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I love hearing him talk. I love hearing Smoltz do a game where Verlander's pitching or Cole is pitching, or last night, you know, Granke's not on the Cole and Verlander level, but he's really, really good. It's almost like he's out there. It's almost like you've got one of those little headsets that you get when you go on a tour of a museum or something like that, where they're explaining each painting. It's almost like you've got that specific to Verlander and Cole. Like you're inside their brains.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're inside their brains because
you're taking the walking tour of the Astro or of Justin Verlander.
Because Smoltz can explain almost to a T exactly what it is they're thinking in certain situations.
Get out of my head, Scott.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Altuve. Get out of my head, Smoltz.
He's ready. That commercial's still really funny to me. Speaking of
By the way, if we had to power rank HEB athletes, I think Altuve's got to be at the top, isn't he?
He's up there, yeah.
He's got the best little one-liners.
Yeah, we'll call it the, if every scale needs to be named by the person whose last name is the worst and the person whose last name is the best, we'll call this the Osweiler-Altuve scale.
Oh, okay, yeah, because Osweiler
was the worst
of the HEBs.
He was by far the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. learning about Texas, trying to fit in.
Because Altuve, when they did the pyramid on the water skiing, Altuve was at the top, right?
Of course he was. Of course he was. God, can you imagine him on the bottom?
Somebody needs to do. I got to get. This is the kind of thing that Deadspin or one of these other websites needs to do. HEB, as local commercials go, they've got to be one of the best in the nation.
Yes.
Like so many times, the local commercials for sporting events, a lot of times they're cheesy and sometimes it's charming how cheesy they are and how bad they are, how tacky they are. Those are so good. Like those are good by national standards, as we're also looking at the video of, speaking of things that are good, the demonstrative, the really expressive Astros fan that was at the game last night. I love that kid.
I do too.
I love him.
We
got to get him on. Tell me, somebody reach out to me on Twitter at Seth C. Payne and tell me who that kid is.
Yes. All right. Speaking of really good, Jeff Bagwell was really good at baseball. I like Jeff Bagwell on commentary too, by the way. When he does games on AT&T Sportsnet, he's really good. TMZ caught up with Jeff Bagwell up in New York City and asked him about the chances for this Astros team. And Bagwell names the one player that he seems to like the best this postseason on the Astros.
How confident are you that they're going to pull through in this series?
Well, I'm definitely confident. Part of the reason is Colin Verlander and the rest of our guys. Our guys who can really hit. Being up 2-1 is certainly better than being down 2-1.
Do you think that does make a difference in the long run?
Well, it does. I mean, obviously playing in Yankee Stadium here against the Yankees is a difficult task. But to win the first game here is big for us to guarantee us going home.
You've played against some of the best pitchers in baseball history. How good does Cole look right now?
He's just a different animal. He's the closest thing I've seen to Randy Johnson. Who we
really?
Had,
wow.
Yeah. Who has something out there when he's out on the mound. It just looks like he feels like he's better than you. And he generally, he is.
He looked like that last game.
He's tough.
I couldn't quite hear. Was he interviewing Bagwell or a subway train?
Yeah, I know. The street
subway
noise,
train. Tell me about Verlander.
The street noise was worse than I thought it was. The street noise wasn't as bad when I was listening to it the first time.
Speak up, Baggy.
I didn't realize it would the street noise would be as loud as it was on the radio.
Back when Baggy was a little bit more free and loose and just out there, he probably would have been louder because he might have been, hey, I'm up in New York. Time to tie one on.
The Cole Randy Johnson comparison there. Is an appropriate one.
It's an appropriate one. Now, it's interesting that Cole hasn't quite looked like his dominant self.
One start.
he didn't look the same. And I actually, through not having double-digit strikeouts and walking as many guys as he did, the fact that he didn't lose anything off his velocity, that he was still throwing hard, it makes me feel pretty good about it because he worked his way through that game. And, yeah, he walked a lot because he didn't have great control, but he was tempting people. The Yankees hitters were complaining about how they didn't see anything over the plate all night long.
Yeah.
So to get out of that game with the performance he did, I thought was pretty damn impressive.
Strangely and seemingly, Daryl Morey now has more job security after this tweet from a couple of weeks ago. We will discuss next. So Adam Silver said on Thursday that the league, the NBA, is dealing with, quote, fairly dramatic financial consequences from Daryl Morey's tweet supporting the Hong Kong anti-government protests. He said at the Time 100 summit, the losses have already been substantial. Our games are not back on the air in China as we speak, and we'll see what happens next. I don't know where we go from here. The financial consequences have been and may continue to be fairly dramatic. With that in mind, Seth, that the financial losses have been fairly dramatic. This next part that I'm going to talk about with Silver, I think, is commendable with Adam Silver, his full support for Daryl Morey. The fact that apparently the Chinese government asked Silver to fire Daryl Morey, and Silver basically said, not only are we not going to fire him, we're not even going to discipline him for this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice that the commissioner of the NBA is actually standing up for free speech in this whole thing.
It was, right. And again, it gets dicey when you start talking about free speech because okay, the First Amendment doesn't protect you from your employer, but the concept of free speech, or especially speaking out political matters about this, it's never a good feel when you're allowing a foreign government to tell you what your employees can and cannot say about human rights issues, potentially.
Especially for a league that allows its players and coaches to speak on almost anything.
Right. So, but on a pure dollars and cents level, so if everybody can just set down your hot political takes for a moment, just talk on a pure dollars and cents level, this is where it gets interesting in doing business with China. And this is where you can see that China isn't necessarily, it's not a free market. It's communists trying to pretend and play it free market capitalism. It's that the market would generally take care of this, which is, hey, there are a lot of NBA fans in China. And largely, if there was one thing we know about consumers, they're very willing to forgive if they like a product. Things fall by the wayside when you like a product. That's why you cheer for athletes that you know have vastly different political views than yourself, right? You love the sport. You love those guys. You're going to forgive the political differences. So the problem is, in China, the market isn't genuinely dictating circumstances. The government's going to tell you what to do. So all these companies, they would love to actually broadcast and use NBA athletes to advertise their products. They're not necessarily going to come back to the table as quickly as they might in a genuinely free society. What does that mean for the Rockets, who, if you watch the preseason game, you'll notice There were fewer Chinese characters, like Chinese alphabet advertisements and sponsors up there in the arena. That's the Rockets themselves individually. It's not just the NBA at large through their TV deals or anything. They're going to be losing out on a lot of money. If it were normal, I'd say, hey, these things blow over. This will come back. I'm not so sure. In China, it's going to take, okay, people talking with their local commie party chiefs and telling them, hey, I miss basketball. Can we watch more basketball? And I don't know how quickly these things rectify themselves.
Yeah, here's more from Adam Silver. He said, we made clear that we were being asked to fire him being Daryl Morey, by the Chinese government, by the parties we dealt with, government and business. We said, there's no chance that's happening. There's no chance we'll even discipline Daryl Morey. I would love to know just what the communication was to Adam Silver. Like, how did that who did it come from? How did it come? You know what I mean? Like, the Chinese government is a very large entity, but it's, you know, does it come directly from a memo from on top?
Right. How much is Yao? Because Yao Ming reportedly has been talking to Silver all the time.
Yeah.
Tanya Ganguly, you guys remember, used to write for the Chronicle. She covers the Lakers. So she was in, I think she was in China.
Was with the Lakers.
She wrote an article about what it was like while they were out there. And reportedly at that time, Silver and Yao Ming were talking to each other, was it 10 or 20 times per day?
A bunch of times a day, yeah.
By phone. So I guess I'm guessing, the complete guess, that Yao is kind of the mouthpiece for whoever he's taking his orders from, since he's the head of the Chinese Basketball Association.
Yeah.
Silver's hearing this stuff from Yao directly.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine Yao's the one delivering a message to fire Daryl Morey. Well, no.
Oh, my gosh. Woo.
Right?
Wow.
Would Yao be the one delivering that message?
I don't know. I don't think he would want to be, but yeah, orders are orders.
I don't know that Yao is necessarily the face of the movement against the NBA over in China. He happens to be the commissioner for the Chinese Basketball Association.
Right.
He is a voice in this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the point person is. I'm thinking, because he's the head of the Chinese Basketball Association,
maybe it's him.
If that's the overseeing umbrella. Again, he's not making the decision, like the overarching decisions, but he's going to be the mouthpiece,
well,
I would imagine.
It's funny. I got asked, you may have brought this up yesterday. If not, I got asked in an interview that I did with a station in Phoenix earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
They had me on there to talk about the ALCS, and it morphed into other Houston topics. We live in a very relevant town right now, sports-wise. So we got talking about the Rockets.
Sports thing. And rain events, baby. That's how we make the national news.
And Tex-Mex, yeah. They asked me about Yao, and they said, is there a feeling among Rocket fans of anger towards Yao's stance on this whole thing, because he made all his money over here.
Yeah.
He made all his money as a Houston Rocket, and that now somehow Yao is stabbing the Rockets in the back because he is taking a hard stand against them as the commissioner of the Chinese Basketball Association. I don't want to say what my answer was. What would your answer be if you got asked that question by a station in another town?
My answer would be, do you know how many actual personal family members of mine Yao Ming would have to actually beat up with his fist before I'd start to have any ill will towards Yao? Like, Yao, there's no way. Angry towards Yao, what percentage of actual Rockets fans could find it in their hearts to be angry at Yao over this right now? Does anybody expect that Yao over there is going to stand up to the, like a guy at Tiananmen Square in front of a tank or something? Right. Well, but maybe we should. Should we expect more out of Yao? Should Yao be raising more of a stink? We don't know that he isn't. Yao might be working behind the scenes. And I guess that's what it is. Yao, we don't know that Yao isn't working really hard to try to rectify this things behind the scenes. I'm guessing he is. He's just not going to do it in a way that in any way shows up any Chinese government officials.
To answer your question about Rocket fans, are there any Rocket fans out there that feel anger towards Yao? I would say the percentage is 5%, because there's always 5% of some fan base that's angry about... There's never a full consensus on anything.
There's usually probably a few people.
There's
usually about like 10% in any survey that can't identify the United States of America on a map.
Right.
So, yeah, you have to take that 5 or 10 or 15% with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's not unanimous, obviously. My answer to the question was that Yao's in a tough spot, right? I mean, Yao, the Rockets are the team that he played his entire NBA career with. He's beloved in Houston. He is the reason why the Rockets were what he was. The biggest reason why the Rockets were worth $2.2 billion when they were sold to Tillman Fertitta. And at the same time, he is in China, right? He lives in China, and he's having to play the middle with a communist dictatorship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, those are tough shoes. And my main answer was, none of us can know exactly what Yao... How Yao processes this on a daily basis. Because Yao seems like a genuinely good person.
Yeah.
It feels like to me that there would be part of Yao taking this hardcore stance against Morey, the NBA, and the Rockets, where there's a little part of him that's dying when he does it.
Well, and there's also, though, I mean, this is the way you have to think about it with China, because it's not a dictatorship per se. It's not like Mussolini is telling everybody what to do. With interesting, like, large communist governments like this, there is a political process.
Yeah.
It's just there's very little tolerance for dissent. So when you make things happen, you got to be very delicate and very careful about how you go about them, because yep. dissent is not smiled upon in here we love dissent, even though we act like we hate it. Deep down inside, we all love it, because it means we can be the dissenter at any point we choose. So I fully trust that Yao is working probably for the benefit of basketball in China, and it's just he's got to be careful about how he does it.
All right, so this is how you know a topic is relevant, when it winds up on South Park. Before we get to South Park clowning LeBron James, let's relive the magic of LeBron James's statement to the media earlier this week on this situation.
Yes, we all do have freedom of speech, but at times there are ramifications for the negative that can happen. When you're not thinking about others, you're only thinking about yourself. So I don't believe, I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl Morey, but I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand, and he spoke. And so many people could have been harmed, not only financially, but physically, emotionally, spiritually.
All right, so that's LeBron. Here is Eric Cartman on South Park on Wednesday night.
Yes, we do all have freedom of speech, but at times there are ramifications for the negative that can happen when you're not thinking about others and you're only thinking about yourself.
Whoa, what's going on, kids?
The protesters are trying to kill Eric again, Mr. Mackey.
Okay, kids, we don't want another incident here, okay?
They're trying to change people's lunch. They don't realize it harms people financially, physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
I can't. Do you watch South Park?
Not sometimes.
I find I enjoy that. I always enjoy the clips of South Park, but I can't sit down and watch an entire episode. I don't know. Yeah. That doesn't hold my interest. There's a lot of people. I'm kind of the same way with The Office. I like watching clips of it on YouTube, but I can't sit and watch a whole episode.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't. Now, the South Park movie I loved. I could never get into it, and then I went to the South Park movie.
Did you watch Beavis and Butthead back in the day?
I did, but it was when I was 14, you know? Okay. I don't know if I could sit down. I'll have to sit down and see if I can sit down through an entire... No, I can remember back then even. Like, I liked Beavis and Butthead for the running gags and whatnot, but yeah. I couldn't, like, actually sit and watch a whole episode.
Did you like the Beavis and Butthead movie?
Well, Beavis and Butthead, they would watch videos on the show, right?
That was part of the show,
it was kind of like they were... And that was the part... It's kind of like going through the musical sequence on Saturday Night Live. If you don't like the artist,
right,
that means I got to sit through this thing. I'm going to go elsewhere. So that's yeah.
So you would flip the channel.
What was the other question?
I don't remember. Okay. Oh, no, did you see the Beavis and Butthead movie?
No, I did not.
Gotcha. All right. Let's shift gears back over to the Texans. Colts week is here. If there were to be a hell week for Texan fans, the one where you get most amped up during the season, is Colts week the week to do it? We will do that, and we'll also talk some Deshaun Watson. We'll talk the quarterback battle in this game as well. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. Seth, back in the day when I would listen to Jim Rome on this station in the late 90s, when I was a listener, I was a P1 listener to Sports Radio 610, driving around town selling telecommunication services to anybody who would buy them.
I'm listening to Jim Rohn.
Talking
about how stupid people are.
That's right. Calling in occasionally and agreeing with him on the stupidity of those people.
Yeah.
It was
classic.
Yeah.
You know what he does a good job of is feeding his, when he interviews people, he makes them feel very special.
He's a really good interviewer.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
No question. But it was still is to a degree, I guess. But back then, still, because a big chunk of his listeners were in Southern California, because the show was just beginning to grow nationally. He would talk a lot about the rivalries of the teams in Southern California, and there was a big rivalry between Raider fans and Charger fans back then. You know, the Raiders were just off of being in L.A. They had just moved back to Oakland. And the Raider and the Charger fans would come in on the show during the week leading up to those games and would just go after each other, right? And they called it Hell Week. It was Hell Week that week because that was the biggest rivalry. It's never going to be like that on a local show in Houston. You're not going to have Colts fans calling in and going off on Houston fans. But I guess my question to you is, if there were a week during the football season where Texan fans should feel like as amped up as any week during the football season, is it the Colts game for Texan fans? Like, is that the biggest rivalry for Texan fans?
It seems like I'm trying to figure that out myself, because for the longest time it was that you couldn't get over that hump of winning in Indianapolis. And then you always had Peyton, who's kind of like your big brother. And then you had to deal with Andrew Luck. And I don't know how much about it was about actual hatred for the Colts. And when it's more even, I feel maybe this is just me personally. Vandy would tell you that it's the Colts. I personally just hate the Titans. I think I hate everything about them. I hate their stupid fans with their poor dental care. I hate Vrabel and his stupid mustache. I hate how much those fans acted like Mariota was the chosen one, and now they would spit on him if they had the chance. There's everything that I don't like, and this goes back to playing against the Titans. You know what I didn't like about the Titans? And this is one of the problems. It took me a long time to get over this with The Rock. They used to have a thing where The Rock would insult us as we were on the field. He'd play up on the video board, and he'd pre-recorded a bunch of stuff.
They would play Dwayne The Rock Johnson
on the
board
to insult. Yeah, with all of his catchphrases about, like, who cares of what the Texans are doing.
It doesn't
stuff like that.
Matter what yeah. you think. Yeah.
Yeah, hey, Texans.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of like that.
Yeah, no, looking back on it, it's pretty funny. But at the time, I was like, screw you, The Rock.
Right.
Yeah, I don't even know how to address you. Yeah. Do I put the in there or not?
Right.
Yeah. So
if that is your real name.
Everything about the Titans just rubbed me the wrong way.
Empirically.
Although we did, yeah. Sometimes in the early years, we would stay at Dollywood. No, where was it? Oh, the Grand Ole Opry Hotel.
Wait, what?
Pretty cool. Yeah.
When you would go to Nashville to play the Titans, you would stay at the Grand Ole Opry?
Hotel. And there's this huge hotel that's got multiple courtyards and everything. It's one of those ones where it feels like you're outside even though you're indoors.
Yeah.
Like an Embassy Suites. You know how they always have that indoor courtyard? Except way, way bigger. And you'd go from like different courtyard to different courtyard.
That's pretty cool.
It's kind of cool, yeah.
Yeah.
But other than that, they can all die.
They can all.
Yeah.
Empirically, it should be the Titans, right? I mean, the one thing you didn't mention about the Titans.
Right, that they
used to be the Oilers, yeah. By God. Like, yeah. That's the city that stole your football team is Nashville and the Titans. It should be the Titans.
Jeff Fisher and his dumb mullet and his stupid mustache. Between Vrabel and nobody's had more head coaches with stupid mustaches than the Tennessee Titans.
That is true. They've had, yeah, they've had bad style. There's no doubt. So it should be the Titans, but the quality of the football team needs to factor in too. And the Colts have been a better football team over time than the Tennessee Titans have. So I would say, like, for me, it's the Colts. Like, that's the week. Those are the games I get most amped up for. And you touched on it. They hadn't won a game in Indianapolis until 2015 was the first time they did. Now it's routine.
Mm-hmm.
Three of the last four they've won. Unfortunately, the only one they've lost, Jacoby Brissett, was the starting quarterback.
Right.
Of course, I think Tom Savage was the starting quarterback for the Texans.
Is there anything about the Jacoby Brissett performances where you feel like, oh, wow, Jacoby Brissett's got the Texans' number? I've never felt that way.
No, I feel like I feel... This is what I feel. There's three games, so we can go through all three of them very quickly. One was you went to New England on a Thursday night, and New England's got Bill Belichick as their head coach. You had Brock Osweiler as your quarterback, and it started rolling downhill on you. And historically, when it has started rolling downhill on you in that stadium, it never rolls back uphill again.
Brock was missing very simple high school level reads in that game.
Yes.
He just pooped his big old, very large pants. It was tall.
His long pants. Yeah. In retrospect,
I like to think of Brock probably wearing like full one piece PJs under his under his uniform.
With teddy bears on them?
Yeah, something like, you know, you can see Brock in like an old Ichabod Crane type of getup or something.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So in retrospect, it's easy to go back and look at that one and say, okay, we see why they lost that. The other two they lost were during the 2017 season. Deshaun Watson didn't start either of those games. Quite honestly, I would have picked the Colts in either of those games.
It wasn't Deshaun Watson versus Jacoby Brissett.
Right.
That's the...
This is.
Yeah.
So
if we run your old test, you love to, after you've made a pick in a game, you like to look at a picture of the head coach and a picture of the quarterback from each team and just check yourself.
Yeah.
Think, wait a second, what are we doing here?
Let me do that right now.
Yeah, so if you're looking at a picture of Jacoby Brissett and Frank Reich, look at him without the big bushy white beard because it's too endearing.
Right.
And then you're thinking about Deshaun Watson, he of the intricate post-game explanations.
Yes.
He of the national championships. He of your delightful conversation.
Evening with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, and then Bill O'Brien. Who are you choosing?
I'm choosing the Texans.
Okay.
I'm choosing the Texans in this case, and it's mostly the headshots of the quarterbacks. And this is no disrespect to Jacoby Brissett, but when I look at the face of Deshaun Watson, I feel like it can calm down. I feel like there could be riots going on in the streets in Houston in the middle of a superhero movie where the city's getting torn up. And if Deshaun Watson decided to take a walk outside at that point, everybody would stop. And they would gather around, and Deshaun Watson would explain the nuances of a Tampa 2 defense to them. And then we would all hold hands and sing Kumbaya, and the Texans would go out and win by 3 touchdowns.
I feel like if Deshaun makes another trip over to the Middle East this year, that he might just have enough time to fix everything. There'll be peace and harmony over there by the time he comes back.
The one good thing about the Texans not going to the Super Bowl is it would give Deshaun Watson more time to work on world peace in the offseason.
We'll also have an NFL franchise in Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
global expansion.
And none of the players will be allowed to say anything about
Right. No, but to answer your question, it's really hard to find something that makes me feel better about a wager that I want than the media headshot of one Deshaun Watson.
Okay, now, and this is where it gets key. If you think about the last time the Texans played in Indianapolis, let's think about the coaching matchup, Frank Reich versus Bill O'Brien. Did Bill O'Brien outcoach Frank Reich, or was Frank Reich just too ballsy for his own good?
More the latter than the former.
Yeah.
He was too ballsy for his own good. You're talking about
him going for it instead of just taking the tie.
Yeah, and I hate the rationale behind teams that go for it because, well, we wanted to win. There was another team earlier this year.
He also said, well, a tie does us no good, when in fact a tie would have done them good at the end of the season.
I would have won them the division.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe things play out differently, butterfly effect and so forth, but just purely the math.
Yeah.
If they had just taken a tie there, and if the season plays out the same way, they would have won the division last. As it turned out, it didn't really matter because they came in here and stomped the Texans in a wild card game. The argument for what he did, and I'm sure retroactively this is how they were arguing it, is, hey, we started the season 1-5. But when we went for it in that week 4 game, it showed the team that I believe in them, that they can win. And ultimately, when we started winning, you can circle back to week 4 when I made that decision to go for it on fourth down in our own territory. And I had the confidence. It didn't work out, but that confidence that I showed in them was a big reason. It was a big boost. It was the fuel that drove us when we won 9 of our last 10 games.
I'll tell you what. Look, because players sit around and talk and second-guess coaches' decisions just like fans do. I think if I'm a player in that locker room after the game, I think I've tried to put myself in that position. If my coach is telling me, no, we're going to go for the win no matter what, I see myself being like, hell yeah, all right. Versus if I see my coach explaining to me why we went for the tie, I'm like, all right, well, okay.
So you like the decision.
As a player, I would. No, as an independent, like as a detached observer, I can go either way with it. And there's a side of it that's still the old blood and guts part of leading a group of men, especially when the season hasn't gotten off to where it is. It'd be very easy to concede at that point and say, well, we need to beg for scraps and get what we can at that moment versus, you know what? No, I don't care. I don't care. We got our backs up against the wall and we haven't been winning. This team, it's going to click for us at some point and we're going to go for that win. I like that as a player. I like that a lot. And I think that you can never quantify this or anything, but I think it probably did reap dividends later in the year.
It may have. In the moment, it certainly wound up fueling the Texans, right?
Yeah.
Like the Texans won that game. They went on to win 8 more games after that, I think it probably gave them a little bit of confidence winning in close games. They wound up winning a lot of close games during that 9-game winning streak. So who knows? Maybe it wound up being good for both teams.
Yeah. But now, what I will say is, when it comes to this matchup and where are the Texans right now compared to where they were, say, 3 weeks ago,
yeah.
I know we made a lot of, hey, is Bill O'Brien not calling the plays anymore because he wasn't carrying the placard 2 weeks ago? And then the mic'd up came out where you could hear him calling the plays. This is what I still wonder a little bit about, is that it's always been play calling by committee with the Texans. There's guys that are in charge of the goal line that week. There's other coaches that are in charge of certain positions. And you'll hear Bill O'Brien on those mic'd up sometimes say, hey, give me a play for such and such. So they're doing it by committee, and he's going to delegate that. By him not carrying the placard, I do wonder if he took a step forward and said, okay, I'm going to delegate even more.
Yeah.
And though O'Brien's the final play caller, that doesn't mean he's the one serving up the plays. It could be times where maybe Tim Kelly's calling the majority of the plays, and O'Brien just has final veto power. So I would like that if that were the case, if he delegated a little bit more, and maybe the game management hiccups are going to be a little bit less, because things certainly seem to be operating more smoothly lately.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610, talking about the Colts and the Texans. I wasn't at the Stern talk last night. Clint Sterner did a film breakdown last night in our live lounge over here on our 130-inch HD movie screen in there.
It's a really cool setup.
It was.
Anytime we have any of these watch parties, you got to come out because it feels like you're watching your own personal movie theater.
It is. It's like a movie theater. It's really, really cool.
It feels like probably whatever room Justin Verlander and Deshaun Watson are watching film together in when they get together. It's probably in a room like this, except it just happens to be in somebody's home there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's presumably like a 15,000 square foot mansion as opposed to a 20-story building here. Were there any takeaways? You were there. I wasn't there. Were there any takeaways from Clint's Stern talk?
He did a really
since we're talking about quarterback play right here.
He did a really good job breaking down a couple of the Fuller drops where two of them you could say were likely that Deshaun didn't quite read the safety the same way Fuller did, and Fuller probably had the right read on the safety, and the ball didn't come to exactly where Fuller expected it. So even though he got his hands on the one where as he's running to the left corner, that ball was a little deeper than he would have anticipated. He got his hands on it, but he had to really leap for it. That was the first one. That was more likely a misplaced ball by Deshaun. And then including the play where Fuller was looking over his left shoulder and had to turn to his right, that was because Fuller expected the ball to be over his left shoulder where it should have been. He turns around, it hits him in the chest. It's tempting to say, well, it hits him in the chest, he should be able to catch that. It was a much harder catch than it needed to be. The Will Fuller drops that I worry about more are the ones where in the past it would drop perfectly down into through his hands onto his chest and bounce off.
Is the third of the three plays where that happened fit more that category than the first two?
That one he said he lost it in the sun.
He did?
Yeah,
okay.
And Fuller's not a guy that makes excuses.
No, I believe him. I hadn't heard that.
So I would, that was one of the listeners. I think the listener, the woman that was sitting in front of me, it was very nice, and I talked to her for a while, and she admitted to harassing me on the text line at times.
Mm-hmm.
So we made up. She hugged me, and we were all fine.
This was a lady at the watch party last night?
She criticizes me for talking over people, which is a fair criticism, but I could say that she might be. Sometimes when somebody's criticizing you for being impolite, they should try to be polite themselves. She gets a little rough.
Does she?
Yeah.
Personal?
But in person, well, I don't know. There's two different people. There's one person that's particularly rude. I can't imagine this woman would be that person. And then there's one that's a little bit more like, hey, Seth, you're interrupting Sean or what have you, which I do. And I told her, I was like, listen, lady, I get excited. I can't help it. I work on it. I try not to, but I get excited.
It's like in any relationship. I'm sure I do things that may annoy you. Like you work around these things.
Oh, yeah.
And you try to get better at them.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
maybe
I do.
There's a few things.
I do. All right, so but it was good last
night. Yeah, and also,
would you recommend future Stern talks for people?
Yes, they should definitely come, especially watching Clint break it down. It's really cool. He also showed some of the things that they're doing to get the ball out of Deshaun's hands faster. And one thing that a lot of people have noted, but it's cool to see Clint breaking it down, is showing DeAndre, for instance, or other receivers making adjustments to their routes based on seeing the blitz. And this is something that's been really frustrating for a long time, which is that sometimes under duress, Deshaun doesn't have anybody even looking for the ball. How is he going to get rid of the ball quickly? Whether that's on the receivers not doing what they're supposed to do or whether it's been that the coaches haven't emphasized it enough. These last couple weeks, receivers have been there when Deshaun's getting blitzed, and he's got safety valves, and that's been really nice to see.
All right.
So the one late in the game where DeAndre caught that first down conversion.
The fourth and three?
Yeah, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, Orlovsky had a really good breakdown of that one on ESPN yesterday too. Like that play's getting a lot of run around the league, Seth. Not just because of the play design and the execution of it, mm-hmm. but the decision making that went into it. I mean, that was a point in the game where I think O'Brien in the past, and if Kaimi Fairbairn and the kicking operation had been working, he would have kicked a field goal.
And that's where going into this game versus the Colts, this is where you hope that these changes are real and substantial, because everybody remembers what hurt the Texans versus the Colts, those corner blitzes. Mm-hmm. If you've got defensive back blitzes and Deshaun's not handling them, that seems to be the magic recipe for the Colts. You want to shut that down in the first quarter.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.